Hello and welcome to Full Access Hoops episode 79. We are back in action. It's me, Corey Waldron, and Jay Christian. Back to talk NBA finals, whatever other NBA stuff comes along with this podcast. Jay, how's it going, brother?
Corey, always a pleasure, man. It's going great. And we're getting to that part of the season, just in the NBA calendar, right, where the finals kind of wrap up. You're hearing trade rumors. And of course, July 1st is Christmas for every NBA sycophant like you and I. So it's a fun time on the calendar, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, we had the this is the first time we've talked in a week.
Yeah, it's a week.
Week. So we have we had our first trade. You don't normally see trade during the NBA finals, but the Brooklyn Nets and Atlanta Hawks made a trade. The Atlanta Hawks got two more first round draft picks. They also got Allen Crabbe, which I apologize for, Atlanta. He's not very good. And then Brooklyn got Taurean Prince, who I actually think is a solid role piece. Agreed. And then they got, which is the biggest acquisition of this deal, is cap space to bring in another max player. And I guess we're going to start here instead of the NBA finals because I brought this up first.
Well, I was going to say, you and I both know some people who would love to talk Nets basketball and what this acquisition means. Shout out to Nick Fay and Jack Manuel of Brooklyn Buzz holding it down. As my man Nick says, always hit that subscribe button and listen to the Brooklyn Buzz for all your Nets needs. I think a couple things, and you've probably read and heard the same reports I have on NBA Twitter that Kyrie is sounding like a lock for the Nets, or mutual interest, I'll say. I won't say a lock, mutual interest. And of course, the common wisdom is the Nets wouldn't be making these moves. It's a smart front office. They don't do anything off the cuff. They wouldn't be making these kind of salary cap saving moves if they didn't think they had at least a very good shot at landing two max slot players. Now you can, you know, speculate which two those are, but the common wisdom seems to be Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I mean, if Durant and Kyrie want to play together, they've given them a destination to go to.
Right.
You know, I know there's some Brooklyn Nets fans who still want D'Lo back in our. I know for a while, like, I've been like back and forth on a Kyrie D'Lo backcourt because I think offensively there are some benefits to having two dynamic guards like that. But then you think about the defense, and you know, Kyrie Irving is known to be a pretty bad defender. Was decent in Boston, but also that's a system that's predicated around their defense.
Sure.
And then D'Lo has just never been a plus defender, really. So I feel like that would be an issue. But like you said, you don't make these moves unless you think you can get some guys. And we all know after the last season Brooklyn had, this is just an interesting destination. I mean, the fact that the Nets are a better destination than the Knicks and the Clippers are a better destination than the Lakers, I mean, we can argue on that maybe a little bit more. But
I would love to.
these second-level markets in these bigger markets seem to be just in prime position to get some stars.
I have and I always do this with us and I go all esoteric on you, but a couple things. The D'Lo, I feel as though now D'Angelo Russell came over via trade with the Lakers during the Magic Johnson regime back in LA, and that just didn't seem to be working. Do you feel as though Nets fans, I mean, he had a great year. It's probably going to lose out to Siakam for most improved player, but definitely should get some votes. But I feel as though Nets fans have overvalued him. It's something you said a second ago. Like, D'Lo's had a great year. I get it. The Nets are turning the corner. All the investments they've made are starting to sort of bear out to fruition. But on no planet, in my opinion, is D'Lo Kyrie Irving. I know that's not what you were saying. You're saying more the backcourt and how that fits. But I feel as though Nets fans, like, I don't know. It feels like D'Angelo Russell's kind of overvalued a bit just in, you know, with the excitement and the hype of being in the playoffs, and D'Angelo Russell's done some great things and he showed a level of maturity and maturation in his game that wasn't there in LA for a number of reasons. But I just feel like he's good, but not great, you know? And I don't know. Some of the the valuations on him is maddening, mostly coming from Nets fans, in my opinion. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, it's funny you say this. I actually saw a stat about D'Lo yesterday, and it was a surprising stat. We know D'Lo to be this offensive guy, right? Well, last year for the Brooklyn Nets, with him on the floor, his offensive rating was 107, which is in the bottom sixth of point guards in the NBA.
Okay.
And then in the playoffs, he had a 97 offensive rating. You know, granted, in the playoffs, that he had a small sample size, being his first ever appearance, and it being only five games. But yeah, I mean, I think they definitely overvalue D'Lo. Like, if I'm looking at even just the young guys on Brooklyn, like I love Caris LeVert way more than I love D'Lo.
Agreed.
And at least Jaren Allen to me has shown flashes that he could be a very similar Clint Capella, Miles Turner like player. I don't think maybe he reaches the same ceiling, but he can be that kind of defensive first, rebounding, tenacious guy. Whereas D'Lo, I think the big question with D'Lo is the fact of, like, how high can his game get? Obviously, he's younger than Kyrie. Kyrie is pretty much at his peak. This is what you see from Kyrie is what you're going to get. Maybe some more points per game in a more free offense and system with less weapons. But can D'Lo become a Kyrie-level player? I mean, the consistency with the jump shot, he's in that Jamal Murray range where you have these flashes of these offensive explosions. But then there's certain games where they're like 2 for 15. You're like, wow, this guy just doesn't seem to have it all together yet. I just think he's the face of this turnaround in Brooklyn, which is why the Nets fans value him so more. Because I had this interesting thought with Nick when I was on the Brooklyn Buzz the other day, is if you lose D'Lo, does that ruin the Nets culture? Like, I'm not even like, and this is how I look at it from this perspective, is does losing D'Lo hurt the culture of Brooklyn because he's been the face of it?
I say no. And I think that you know, and I think it was Jack a few weeks ago, I forgot, somebody in the playoffs is a role guy on another team, and Jack tweeted something out to the effect of, oh, we could use a guy like that. And it's true, and I forget who it was, it's one of, and I apologize and to the person who I can't name, and they will probably not listen to this, so I think we're okay, but the name escaping me is bad potting or bad radioing, so apologizing to the listeners on the front end. But you know, Jack's tweet was you know, we could use a guy like this, player X, right? Hard hat, lunch pail, we could use this guy. And I retweeted him, you're beyond getting those guys, right? You have the Jared Allens, you have the lunch pail guys. You need to go star hunting, right? Like, there's no, and D'Lo, D'Angelo Russell's not a star to me. To your original question, no, I don't think that changes the culture, because I think Brooklyn has done it the right way and cleared a lot of brush from the, you know, Billy King era, from the he who shall not be named era of Nets basketball. And they're in a position now to be in a very attractive destination. Obviously, New York being one of the few places, I think, you can lure free agents on the East Coast because all the warm weather spots are on the West Coast, obviously. But you know, Brooklyn and New York in general being an exception, I think, for free agents. I think the culture is systematic, and I think it's in place. And I think D'Angelo, I think it's been mutual, but I would argue that the culture has helped D'Angelo Russell more than Russell has helped the culture. Now, he hadn't been bad for the culture, not to say, you know, if that makes sense, right? It's like if someone goes to the Spurs, right? It's set up in such a way that a guy has a chance to blossom and grow and not be under the same kind of microscope as, say, a, you know, Los Angeles Lakers, for instance. So I think if he's gone, that's fine. I know what he means to this organization and the fans, but I don't think you go down with the ship on trying to make sure D'Angelo Russell is a net, you know, long term.
I mean, I think that's actually a great point, that the Nets organization is what helped D'Lo become this leader and more mature player, and they just kind of benefited from it. You're actually, I like the way you've looked at that. That's probably more so how D'Lo has been for this Brooklyn Nets franchise. Now, one last thing before we get off Nets and actually talk about the finals. Obviously,
you mean this isn't Brooklyn Buzz? We can't. No, I'm just kidding.
So obviously, well, this is just because I love the free agent discussion that we're getting close to. It's almost time of the year. Like, so Christmas. Now that they have the ability to get Kyrie and possibly Kevin Durant, I saw some rumors on Twitter about maybe the Nets flipping LeVert, Jared Allen, taking D'Lo and sign and trading him maybe to the Phoenix Suns for the sixth pick, then packaging the sixth pick, LeVert and Jared Allen, and maybe one or two other role players to the Pelicans for Anthony Davis. Now, is that outlandish, or could there actually be a super crazy scenario where Brooklyn gets Kyrie, KD, and AD?
Holy cow. I don't, just the thought of that is impressive, because I will say, I don't think that, and I think David Griffin's a smart enough, exec, NBA exec, that he will not, that picks will not simply suffice in what they're trying to do, right? Because they aren't, first, they already have the number one pick, right?
Right.
But
they have Zion. Think, we can just say Zion for the pick.
Right. They have Zion, right? And that's why I think, despite what everyone says, whatever reports about them wanting to do business with the Pelicans, wanting to do business with the Lakers, for instance, I still think the Lakers are attractive because they can give you assets that can play day one.
Right.
Ingram's health status, notwithstanding, but you can get some assets back. So I think that's a package where Pelicans can put people around Zion and have guys, NBA ready players that are still young, still cost controlled in terms of a salary perspective. That can help immediately, right? Because that's the only way you can sort of justify trading a transcendent player like Anthony Davis. The way you laid it out, there's a path to that. I mean, I guess I would have to lean on some of our draft experts at OTG to understand what would be available at six. Is it worth wetting the beak for? Because I could see an argument where New Orleans says, well, we probably don't want anything worse than maybe the top four picks, 1 and 4, for instance.
Right.
But if there's still value at six and there's things you can, sort of build a structure around Zion Williamson and your sort of, sort of youth movement with young players and draft picks to sort of build the foundation of what the Pelicans have as an organization. If that's the case and there is value still at six, tacked on with NBA ready players who are, LeVert, that's fan favorite for sure. I like it, man. I think that's amazing. I mean, I'm blushing just thinking about it. And I think if you can trade for Anthony Davis, however you do it, anything not bolted down the floor, you absolutely do it. 100%. Like, don't even hesitate.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I think if you can get any type, you can get two players who are for sure top five caliber players, and then Kyrie, who I think is in the top 10, probably just out of the top five after this past postseason, because I always judge on what have you done for me lately. Sure. But this is an interesting time for Brooklyn. And now let's go to an interesting time in Toronto.
Yes.
The Toronto Raptors have a 3-1 series lead. Only one team in NBA history has come back down from 3-1, the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers against the Golden State Warriors. I'm so like conflicted on this series. Like, I have so many conflicting thoughts. Like, a part of me feels like Toronto's been, obviously they've been the better team, but at the same time, like, there's the asterisk around this win in my mind because there's just no Durant. And Clay's missed the game. Cousins clearly is like 25% of who he was. And then the role players are just old. I mean, like, I think we saw how old Livingston is this series. We saw the lack of shooting this team has compared to years past is really a negative for them. But then on the flip side, I mean, Kawhi in Toronto has just been really good. I mean, Kawhi had a quiet 30 points in game three, a very loud 34 points in game four. And it's 3-1 going back to the crib.
Yeah. So in preparation of this episode today, I went and did some NBA reference history. I looked at the 1987 finals between the Los Angeles Lakers and the Boston Celtics. And, I looked, and if anybody's read anything about those Celtics, I think Larry Bird famously essentially broke his back in 1984, 85, summer of 84, installing the driveway at his mother's home. Larry Bird, three-time MVP at the time, rather than farm out that manual labor, French Lick, Indiana, we do the work ourselves, did that, broke his back, was never the same again. And so, for the remainder of his career, his regiment pregame included going to see the team doctor and essentially a pregame regiment to where team physicians could unlock his back, quote unquote, to where he could be upright and play an NBA game, and then immediately it would shut down and he would never practice in between. And that was sort of the protocol for Larry Bird for the remainder of his career. That being the backdrop, I looked at the 87 finals. There was no asterisks around the Lakers winning that championship. Everyone remembers Magic Johnson's junior skyhook that got them the game at Boston Garden. I look at the 89 finals when the Pistons finally broke through and beat the Los Angeles Lakers, where Byron Scott was injured in a hellacious practice session conducted by the maniacal Pat Riley right before the finals started. Magic Johnson hurt his hamstring in game one of the 89 finals. Interestingly enough, in the NBA record books, there was no asterisk behind that finals win for the Pistons. And then I went all the way back up to 2015. With no Kyrie Irving, with no Kevin Love for the Cleveland Cavaliers, where the Warriors kicked off their dynasty, fighting LeBron and a bunch of guys we probably couldn't point out in the supermarket. And interestingly enough, there was no asterisk by that title. What does this very long lead up mean? Injuries are part of the game. We forget them in our mind's eye. History forgets them later on, and injuries happen. Yes, there's no Durant. Klay was valiant in game four, but for all the good luck that the Warriors have had on this run, that the dice are sort of changing and going the other way, to quote a line from the movie Major Payne, they will get no sympathy from me. Specifically, if they want my sympathy, they can look in the dictionary between shit and syphilis. That is where they will find my sympathy. Having said that, having had an all along buildup, this has been a crazy series, man. I thought Toronto actually had a puncher's chance just because of the way they play defense. And just Kawhi has been on a heater. But if you'd have told me there was going to be 3-1 heading back to game five, there's no way I would have believed that, you know, health Durant or no Durant. Like, even I don't know what to make of the series. I mean, I think game three was a weird sort of throwaway game because Toronto always in control, but you're always worried about Golden State making that run at home. But this has just been weird, man. This has been a weird four games.
Yeah, I mean, game three was one of the games where we went in and knowing Klay and Durant were both out, and then seeing just how the Raptors went right out to Marcus Cousins early. They really wanted to get Marcus Gasol established, and then Cousins on the other end, the Warriors tried to get him established, and he just didn't have it. And you could tell right from the get that it was going to be all Steph. You know, Steph had 17 in the first quarter, finished with a career best 47. It really felt like LeBron from that 2015 finals, where LeBron just had to literally do everything, and you kind of just hoped you were able to get enough from the Dellavedovas to win it.
All delis.
Yeah, all delis. And then game four, I mean, hell, the first half was the Warriors had that. I mean, the Raptors didn't take the first lead till the third quarter.
Right.
And in the first half, I felt like the Warriors had plenty of chances to pull away. Raptors couldn't hit anything. The Warriors, once again, sloppy with the basketball, 10 turnovers at halftime, finished with 17 for the game. And, you know, that's been the Warriors' MO. They get a little bit too sloppy. It keeps other teams in it. And then in that third quarter, the Raptors went on a run. I mean, this as of right now, right, you're right on the injuries happen. You're 100% correct. You know, it's just, without Durant, though, and this bench being so bad, this Raptors team is just way better, I think.
Let me ask you an X's and O question. I got a couple things on this because there's a lot, I think, in this series. There's just one, given how Klay played in game four, which it looked like that game six against Oklahoma City in 2016, where he didn't miss a shot and he keeps them in it and forces game seven. Given how he played in game four, do you think Kerr should have gone to him in game three?
I mean, I had the feeling right after the first quarter of like, wow, like Klay looks good. I mean, right. He's got that usual little swagger walk where it kind of looks like he's been over to one side. Look, I didn't see like an actual noticeable limp. I just saw him walking like himself. So I think,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can certainly say that if he looked even, I guess, 20% worse than he did in game four, why didn't he play in game three? And obviously he wanted to play in game three, and the team said, like, no, we want to sit you out. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't necessarily hate it, because I think what you got in game four from Clay is exactly what you wanted. And maybe you wouldn't have gotten that, or maybe he would have gotten re-hurt if you put him in game three. But he looked like he could have played game three, that's for sure.
At least to the shots. I mean, he's got a better shot on one leg than, you know, Jarevko does of shooting some of those shots. So I wonder, I mean, that's armchair quarterbacking. But yeah, I'm like you, because I thought, you know, he'd come out and they're playing the cards close to the vest, they being the Warriors. And so he's going to come out and kind of Willis Reed, you know, he makes a shot or two, but he's not really ready to go. But he looked good, and he was taking primary defensive assignments. And I was thinking, well, thanks, Steve Kerr, for doing the Raptors a solid, not playing him game three, because like you say, if he looked that way in game four, if he would have just been, you know, just a shell of that game four performance, I mean, that would have helped the Warriors cause, because Steph was doing everything, my gosh. And I guess, so when you watch these games, it feels weird at Oracle, right? I feel as though the Warriors are a proud team. They're proud champions. They've achieved a lot. But it feels almost, at times it felt like in games three and four, particularly in game four, that, you know, the crowd's kind of mustering that Warriors chant, which drives me bonkers. And they're kind of going and they're barking, but it doesn't seem like the same. Like it seems like they're trying to manufacturing that bravado, right? Like it didn't seem real to me. Like it was just sort of, you know, they're yelling loud. And they're almost like, you're almost witnessing the Warriors try to convince themselves, right? Like it's like they're fighting, but Toronto is just sort of taking the mentality of Kawhi Leonard, and they just kind of keep it even keel. They keep executing. They keep doing what they need to do. And I just felt like the Warrior, like this didn't feel, it didn't feel as scary as it used to, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, when it's like, okay, the Warriors are coming. They know they're coming. Damn, they know they're good. All we can do is sit here and be mad as Warrior haters. But it didn't feel that way in games three and four. It felt as like the crowd's trying to get them juiced up. They're trying to juice themselves up, but it's just not the same guys. It's not Mo Spates, and it's not Barbosa, and it's not these guys who were big role players 3-4 years ago. It's these new dudes who, you know, the core is the same, but these new guys have never been there in these moments. Like, what do you think about that? The perception of how the Warriors looked out there?
I mean, the Warriors are known to be a team that you don't want to see at home. Like they almost had the Seattle Seahawks from a couple of years ago with the Legion of Boom, right? Yep. The arena, the fan base was an unknown challenge for road teams. You really had to go in there. It had a college atmosphere. You definitely hear more Raptor fans. I've even seen like videos of people who have been at the games posting just giant Raptor based fan sections. And also, like, this is the last season at Oracle. So like, I also, for me personally, I expected this to be like a rocking playoff. Like the fans just like, well, this is our last chance to see our team. Let's get extra energized. Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe you're right. Maybe it's because they're banged up and the team kind of sees how talented, or the Warriors fan base kind of sees what they're up against, and the fact that they're facing a bunch of killers. I mean, they won that game four and not a single Raptor was smiling on the way back to the locker room. These guys have just adapted we don't give a shit about anything aside from winning. And that's we're going to come out here and we're going to play physical. We're going to come at you, and that's going to be how it is. And I don't think the Warriors necessarily are prepared for that, because like you said, I mean, they've had Barbosa. They had, I mean, Nick Young, even to a degree.
Right.
David West, Harrison. I mean, Harrison Barnes, JaVale McGee. And even, I know Barnes was a starter for that team, but he was just the right type of complimentary player. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, for example, game four, they had eight made threes, 8 for 27. And Curry and Thompson are the guys who made those 8 threes. Not a single other Warrior hit a three. And you can't win in the NBA when only two guys can shoot and make threes.
Well, that was the deal with the devil, right? Like with when you got Durant, it's like you can get Durant, but the bench is just not going to be there because you can't sign any guys that are worth their money, right?
Right.
So you get these guys that haven't been in these moments. You get Bogut off the Australian scrap heap, whatever, right? But you can't. And I think all that contributes to it, right? Because they got to log these heavy minutes, and it's a long freaking year when you keep going to the finals every year and you're logging 90 plus games, 100 plus games, and guys, you get people's best punch for 82 nights out of the year, right? I think it just all catches up with you in the end. Like, and then it starts to be a little Warrior hate, right? So, the story out where Chicago was thinking about buying out Robin Lopez, and of course the Warriors rightly wanted to get him, but Chicago's kind of like, screw that. We'll keep him. One, we're paying him. And then two, we're not trying to help the Warriors, right? And I think there's a little bit of that now. When you get a guy on the buyout market, it's like, well, or trade, it's like, well, I can trade him to, the Kings, or I can trade him to the Warriors. Well, I'm not going to help the Warriors, right? So all that sort of coalesce, and then it's like, it's just the champs on an island, which is a fascinating thing to watch, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know the Wayne Ellington was a guy that the Warriors really wanted, but he wanted to play big time minutes, so he went to Detroit. But like, that's a guy who this Warriors team desperately would love to have, even to play like 20 minutes off the bench just to have some more shooting. Quinn Cook, though, shout out to Quinn Cook. Never seen a shot he didn't like.
Man, he never is no fear.
Played 6 minutes in game four, took 5 shots. No fear. He is the Deion Waiters confidence level player for this.
I was going to say, who do we name the shooting school after? Is it the Russell Westbrook school? Is it Deion Waiters? I like Deion Waiters. Is the Gilbert Arenas? Is the Agent Zero school? Like, who? Who's
after? I think it's because of the efficiency. It's Deion Waiters.
There you go.
if you're not hitting at least 40%, you're under 40, you're Deion.
So that's another thing. And that's such a weird, and that's what I mean by being, it's a weird space. Cause on the one hand, you're Steve Kerr and you're the staff, and you're like, okay, I got to push a button. I got to figure out who the hell is not afraid of this moment. Right. But then guys fire it up. It's like, wow, that's not the one I want you to shoot. Right. It's like, it's just a strange, I don't know. It's weird, man. Did you think? Oh, go ahead.
It's because, like, you think about the bench, right? So the bench is Kevon Looney, who's already playing with a fractured collarbone, which is...
Shout out to that dude, for real.
Yeah. Really muscling it through. Then Sean Livingston, obviously, can't shoot. I mean, you get some decent minutes from Livingston, but he was a minus 14 in game four.
Oh, my gosh.
Bogut, I think Bogut is serviceable. I mean, compared to Cousins, at least he can give you some more rebounding and defense.
Right.
And then if you're the Warriors, like, you really wanted something from McKinney and Cook. And Cook just shoots a lot, gets good looks, I think, but just can't really hit anything, just isn't there. And then McKinney, I love the energy and heart he plays with, but he played 8 minutes in game four. And I think Kawhi scored 22 points in those 8 minutes.
And I was going to say, God, you killed me with that stat. Cause I was going to say, I like McKinney's energy more on defense. Offense, I feel like he's lost and he's not really bringing anything to the table. But I thought defensively he was serviceable, but then you throw that stat at.
So, well, the 22 points was a joke. It felt like 22 points. I don't know how many it was, but I'm telling you, every time McKinney was on Kawhi was like, oh, I'm going to school.
Here's the thing, like, it was that bad that I believed you and I didn't even question it. Like, that sounded like the right stat. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. That seemed like that was the number. I think I guess we're still on the Warrior side of the discussion of the ledger. So I guess the question, a couple things, right? One, just the fundamental question, does Durant play? To me, and you can see we read the same, Twitter feeds, the conspiracy theories are out there. He's sitting, da-da-da, to show them because he had a fight with Draymond back in October. That's why. And I think that's stupid. I mean, I think guys are professionals. I don't think that's it. Now, I would be entertained or seduced by the notion that, go old school Ricky Waters, for who, for what? If he's kind of, he's not quite there, he didn't want an Isaiah Thomas situation where he goes out and, does it for the team, air quotes, and then is jacked up for the summer, even though, Kevin Durant in an air cast, people would still sign him to a max deal this summer. So I think my thought is on his injury just in general is I feel like it's probably more than they let on. It probably wasn't a tear. It's not a tear, obviously, but I think it's worse than what the reports were initially, and I think it was just a little gamesmanship by the Warriors to keep Toronto staff on their on its toes. But I mean, because I kind of feel like at this point, if he could play, he'd have played, right? There's no sense in him like kind of come out like Superman in game five or six. Like, I feel like if he can play in game five, he could have played in game three, is my thought. But what do you think about him playing and the severity of his injury in general?
Well, I had a tweet the other day. I know you saw it because you commented with the rock gif of the eye roll. And, I don't know if you see it, but for some reason that tweet, like, not it didn't go viral to those listening, but like 30 people retweeted and 100 people liked it, and like 14,000 people saw it. So now, like, I have a prediction out there that like people are latching onto. But I said before game four that I thought the Raptors would win game four, and then Durant comes back in game five. The Warriors come back from down 3-1. They win this thing. Durant completely changes his narrative. He's the hero and becomes in complete control over his narrative, right? Mm-hmm. Well, then game four happens, and I'm, you know, me being me, I'm like, my predictions are live for now.
Still a chance, right? Yeah, sure.
Bucks in five all over again. And then you get the notification that, like, Durant couldn't even, like, warm up before game four. Or, like, couldn't even, like, do a shoot around the day before game four. And it's like, wow, like, we've been hearing mid-series, either game four, game five, and then before game four, it was like, okay, maybe game five, game six. But, like, he can't even move around yet on the court. Like, he can't sprint. And, like, calf injuries are already a weird injury. Like, I've my right calf is, if I am playing basketball, there's two things that are going to happen. I'm going to probably roll my right ankle, and I'm probably going to have my right calf on fire at some point from playing full court. It's just, for some reason, those are what happen. Doesn't matter if I stretch, this is what my body does. But right, you get a calf injury, well, that also affects your Achilles. I know some Alder was going all Inspector Gadget and was bringing up all of these reports on Durant and like where Durant's calf is, where he's been icing his leg. But if your calf's hurt, it's not crazy uncommon for your Achilles to suffer some strain from your calf.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
You know, so whether or not the calf injury was major and then caused a runoff injuries, which is not uncommon for injuries, you get hurt one time, it generally causes some sort of other, you know, discomfort or mess up in your body if you have to, you know, recalibrate your walking style because of your calf. So I think he's just not ready. And do I think he plays in game five? I don't know why I would think he does. You know, I like to think he does, but I think realistically we might not see him until game six, and there still might not even be a game six.
I would say game what? What game did you say?
I do think there's a game five still in Toronto where the Warriors can win. I don't know if I can rely on DeMarcus Cousins to be as good as he was in game two. I feel like that was an outlier. He was able to play 27 minutes and be really good, but he's looked extremely tired and just not good. He just doesn't look good. I don't care about the flashy passes he can still do. He just doesn't look good to me. And
go ahead. Sorry.
I just want to say that there is a game five scenario where Curry and Klay both go off, and this goes back to Oracle.
Yeah, a couple things on that. I think one with DeMarcus, I just never realized just how big he's, like, the massive man. That's a big dude.
Yeah.
And the fact that he shoots it and moves well when he's, you know, not coming off an injury is remarkable. I think, like Embiid, though, not that I'm his trainer or coach or anything, but I think I'd like to see him come back maybe 15, 20 pounds lighter just to kind of sustain his career. Sort of like what Duncan did, right? You know, Tim Duncan totally reconfigured his nutrition body towards the end of his career to sort of extend it up to like age 38, I think. A couple things with the game five. Yeah, I'm like you. I think the calf, I mean, it goes directly to the Achilles, right? So like you say, you know, overcompensating for one injury to cause other injuries is a very real thing. I mean, you do that just kind of walking around the house. When you have something sore, right, you start overcompensating. I can't imagine trying to stay in front of, you know, Kawhi Leonard to do that in an NBA game. So then from a coaching standpoint too, you know, like you say, okay, well, we have a hobbled Durant come out there and try to play in game five, but you know, how do I fit that into the game plan? How do I, you know, it almost seems messy at this point, right? Like, because Durant hadn't been, it's not as though like similar to DeMarcus. Now, if it's a situation where maybe Kevin was back in game two or three and we gave him spot minutes, but then we say, okay, game five, it's do or die. We're really going to put him out there, let him start, get him a heavy workload. That would be different. But to come out just cold, you know, after a month of being off, obviously still tender and bothered by the injury, to try to fit him into a game plan, I think that throws everything off. For better or worse, I think these Warriors that have been in the finals thus far are who you have to ride with, right? I think you can try to get too cute. I get it. It's Kevin Durant, arguably the best player in the world, but it's just a weird... I just don't know how he fits right now at this point, right? If it was a gradual thing where he was ramping up to game five, different discussion. But in this scenario, oh man, I mean, it would be, your prediction would be amazing, because that would be the greatest comeback if Kevin Durant just sort of parachutes in these next three games and is Kevin Durant, then holy cow, that'd be one of the greatest stories in NBA history. But I just don't, just the way bodies work and things like that, I just don't see it. And I also think too, I thought Clay, like we said, gave a valiant effort, but I think it was pretty clear that he probably got the needle before the game, because you could see moments towards the end of the game, they were retaping him and he kind of tweaked the hamstring a little, in game four. And he just, like I said, you gutted out a great performance, but, I just think they're banged up, and Steph, after that game three performance, I didn't think he was going to have anything in game four, because he worked so hard and played practically the entire game three. I was surprised to see him sort of, and he didn't have a great game. It was really sort of quiet 23 or 24, I think he had, with turnovers and second guessing, but he just looked fried. So
yeah,
I mean, I just feel like they're on the ropes right now.
So a couple of things I want to add to that. So, I mean, Curry had 27, but you're right. He shot 40% from the field, and I know people were like on him too. Like, oh, here's your, you know, here's Curry who needs Kevin Durant. Look how bad he's been. I know someone was posting like his one air ball he had in all of game four as like a representation of Curry in the NBA finals. Like, I don't think people realize that the 44 minutes he played in game three were a lot more than just 44 minutes and like being 47 points. Like, he was constantly double teamed. They were constantly being physical with him. He had all the attention on offense, and then he still, you know, had to guard these guards in Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, who are constantly moving and are constantly running you into screens. Like, it was a very tiring. And also, I thought Curry in game three dove on the ground like five times. Like, he literally did everything he could in that game three. I expected him to not be as good in game four. So, you know, that is what it is. Mm-hmm. And then on the Durant front, I mean, my concern is a concern you raise is, does he, even if he comes back, like, how does this fit? Like, you know, you're in the middle of the NBA finals. You're not at 100%. Even if you come back, I have to believe maybe you can get close to like 80%. Mm-hmm. And then how does that fit in? Like, chemistry is a very important thing. The Raptors haven't had to swap any pieces out of this starting lineup. The Warriors have already not started Cousins in game one, started Cousins in game two, had no Klay Thompson in game three. Bench players suck in game four, and then randomly going to inject Kevin Durant in game five. Like, it's just like a lot of moving pieces going on for the Warriors this series, which just doesn't bode well. But granted, like, if Durant's in this series, maybe that's just like the confidence boost. Like, everyone's like, oh shit, well, we got Durant back now. Like, that's an easy, at least 20 to 25 points. If all of our big three get going, you know, we can make a run of this thing.
Right.
But it's still a lot. A lot of question marks, which is probably what makes Warriors so uneasy. And I saw something this morning about how there's just a lot of confusion in the Warriors office because no one really knows what's going on with Durant,
which is weird, right? Like, it doesn't, like, that's a strange thing that that's what's coming out, right? It's just strange. It sounds like, I mean, and the comparisons have been made, and I think they're an interesting comparison of sort of what was going on with Kawhi during his last season with the Spurs during the regular season, though, right? But this is happening in the finals, right? I don't think, and to be clear, I mean, I think the front office and the training staff and Durant and his, you know, posse, to quote Phil Jackson, I think they're all on the same page. But it also seems a little cloak and dagger in the sense that that I feel as though the coaching staff thinks, okay, he's ready, he can give it a go, but it also seems as though Durant tries, and I think for sure he's giving a good faith effort, Durant, but it also seems like they're not, it's almost like a, you know, go ask Kevin kind of thing, right? I don't know. Is that just me? Am I reading too much into it? Because I think I like messiness, but it doesn't sound as though, man, our guy's down, we need him. I mean, players are saying the right things. You know, Kerr is, you know, being very diplomatic in the pressers, but it also just seems a little tension and not like, not everyone seems quite on the same page, or am I reading too much into that?
I mean, I think what also goes into that, though, is we keep having all these Durant's leaving rumors.
That's true.
So I think you add in the fact you're in the middle of the NBA Finals, and not only are you, you know, you're losing, but like, you've, at this point, if history is history, you lost this series. Right. That's what the numbers show. 1 in 33 have done it, or 1 in 34 technically have done it. So then you throw in the rumors that, you know, middle of the series, Brooklyn makes a trade. Oh, well, now they can get Durant and Kyrie. It's like, oh shit, here we go again. We're getting these, Durant's fucking leaving us and they ain't even playing. So I think that plays a factor into it. And like you mentioned, I don't think the Draymond Durant battle necessarily, you know, is a major factor in this, but we've all had shitty things said to us, and like, they do harp in your mind. So, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, Durant not at least once in this series having the thought of Draymond yelling at him saying, we don't need you, we want without you. And Durant sitting there like, oh, you don't need me, huh? You really don't need me. Cause like, some of those words do cut deep, especially when, you know, we're in year three of this thing, right? So they've already been down this championship road twice. And then in year three, Draymond's throwing shots like that at the guy who has clearly won you the last two titles. Yep. You know, I definitely think there's some, what's the word I'm looking for? Resentment there between some of the players.
Well, the guy who has burner accounts is probably the guy that will hold a grudge like that, right? Like, I mean, right. The same dude. Like, to be fair, on the one hand, I say, no, that's probably not what's going on. But on the other hand, if someone's got burners, I mean, they're probably going to be the type of person that sort of, and I hate to have gender discrimination or generational discrimination. Ages. We're talking boobs 2 weeks ago and now that. But I mean, that's sort of like a, you know, new dudes, millennial kind of thing, right? Like, I'm holding that card. I'm holding that resentment in and, you know, good luck without me kind of thing. But I mean, and to be fair, I think we've dissected them as much because they're fascinating as the champions, right? So that's how we always do. But I mean, I think a lot of credit obviously has to go to the Toronto Raptors, right? I mean, and I can't imagine what it's like being a Raptors fan and you're hyped and you're a game away and you go to try to find content about your team. And much like we've done here for like the past 20 minutes, it's what's wrong with the Warriors and not what the Raptors are doing right. So I want to do my part and rectify that and just say, holy cow, Kawhi Leonard is on a heater. And Kyle Lowry is not taking this moment for granted. He's diving on loose balls. He's getting part owners ejected, but he's shooting lights out. Siakam had that great first game and has been steady. Not obviously the caliber of game one, which I think we all expect, but it's been steady. Ibaka came out of nowhere these last couple games. Gasol's been great. Nick Nurse is pushing all the right buttons from a coaching perspective. Give the props to the Raptors, man. They're really holding their own in this series, regardless of who's on the other side. You can only play who's in front of you. And the Raptors are taking full advantage of this opportunity. And hats off to them for what they look like right now.
We were definitely going to touch on the Raptors before. I think we talk about the Warriors too much because, I mean, as we all predicted, or at least we all expected, going into this year, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion that the Warriors were getting their three-peat, right? I mean, that's just how we all saw it after they got Cousins. So, like, that being the team of the last 5 years, the dynasties, that's just the thing that sticks out more is the fact that, wow, it might not be the Warriors at the end of this thing.
Right.
Then back to the Raptors. Yeah, I mean, Kawhi Leonard is having, he had 36 points in game four with zero turnovers. The only other player to do that in NBA Finals history is Michael Jordan.
Good company.
you know, they've just done it. They've played well. They've played with their heads down. They haven't gotten overly aggressive with the refs. Yeah, the fan pushing Kyle Lowry. I think that if anything, that inspires the team to want to have a more FU mentality for game four when that happened in game three. You know, and I think Marc Gasol has been pretty damn good. Kyle Lowry is like interesting because, you know, he's shooting 35% from the field, 36% from three. His only really good scoring game is game three, but he just does everything right. I mean, he makes the right passes. He plays stellar defense. You've gotten a Danny Green moment. You've gotten a Fred VanVleet moment. Ibaka, like you said, the last two games, actually the last three halves, the second half of game three, yeah, then all of game four, he's been tremendous. He had the six blocks in game three. Couldn't be stopped in game four. I mean, what do you have, 22 points off the bench or whatever?
All right, yeah, OKC days.
Yeah, They've just been good. And I mean, honestly, we haven't talked about much of this either. You know, Nick Nurse has really outcoached Steve Kerr. Like, you can make a credit to the fact that the Raptors just have more talent and more depth, but he's made all the right adjustments, all the right switches. He's matched, you know, Cousins going into the lineup for the Warriors, when to pull Marc Gasol to insert Serge Ibaka, I think has been a really important underlying part of this storyline, because, you know, Marc Gasol can get exposed if the wrong lineup's out there, because he's just not very fast. But I think Nick Nurse also just done a tremendous job coaching in these finals.
I think not very fast was very generous. That was very nice of you, the Gasol.
Yeah, I didn't want to insult Gasol. I know he's listening.
So do you think I guess the question, and this is a question that Dwayne Casey and DeMar DeRozan may have, you know, for all of eternity. Everything stays the same, and I don't want to get caught in the recency bias here, but let's say things stay the same. Let's say Masai Ujiri makes a move. It's not, let's say it's not the Kawhi move, but say he tinkers with the roster a little bit this summer and during the trade deadline, and kind of retools the Raptors, sort of similar to what he did with getting Marc Gasol. But he still has DeRozan, he still has Dwayne Casey as a coach, but LeBron is no longer in the East. Are the Raptors still in this position?
No.
Okay. And why is that? Do you think is Kawhi the answer, or
it's? I think the big part of Kawhi is the answer, and I think, you know, there was just something wrong with that Raptors team. I don't necessarily think it was built, and like you mentioned, they probably still tinker a little bit, but I mean, I think they still get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but I don't think there's a DeRozan led team where the inconsistency of Kyle Lowry's offense and the lack of 3-point shooting of DeRozan that gets this team to where it is now. I think Kawhi being able to be also the best defender on this team, because DeRozan's just not a good defender. So I think Kawhi being able to be the defender he is, being the 3-point shooter he is, the leadership he has, because, I mean, it's different. It's a different leadership with Kawhi. Like, he just doesn't talk. Like, he just goes out there and leads by example. And he's just like, I'm going to never be flustered. I'm never going to be bothered. You guys can just kind of pick up on this, and we're just going to go to war.
Right.
I think there's a different mentality with this Raptors team than years past. And I think they may be a little bit closer with LeBron gone and DeRozan still there. But I can't see them having this much success if you take away Kawhi and insert back DeMar DeRozan.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's change the facts a little bit. Let's say Kyle Lowry is the one that gets shipped out. They keep DeRozan. They get to Kawhi, and they get NBA point guard, but it's not Kyle Lowry. But you say it's maybe a step down, so you get like a, you know, just a serviceable NBA point guard with Kevin DeRozan.
Give me a name for the point guard, because this is important if I'm going to try and say this guy's or I'll take this installment of the team.
Okay. And I don't know anything about contracts or anything like that in terms of.
Don't worry about contracts. Just the name.
Like a George Hill.
Oh, okay. That's. Okay. That's it. Oh, that's interesting, so because.
Would you agree that Lowry. Well, let's start here. Would you agree Lowry is better than George Hill?
Yeah. Okay. He's definitely better, but they're similar in the fact they both are defensive minded. I think Kyle Lowry's probably a better ball handler and facilitator than George Hill, but George Hill's probably the better offensive player, or at least the better shooter.
Right.
That's interesting. I still don't think that team's better, though. there's the DeRozan thing where, like, I was rooting for him against Denver in the first round with the Spurs, but
right,
there's just something about DeRozan that doesn't scream, I can be the second best player on a winning team.
So because I think your analysis, I agree with it, that something had to change. Sometimes you're winning games and it's just sometimes you just need a fresh voice in the locker room, right? And I guess we could play that game too here in a second. But so you think, you know, given the choice, we had to ship one of them out. You think the guy that had to go was DeRozan over Lowry? Because they both struggled in the playoffs, right? They both have pretty extensive histories about, you know, sort of not coming up in the playoff and lack of playoff success in recent years.
Yeah.
But you think DeRozan was the guy that had to go?
Yeah. I think for two simple reasons for me. Not a very good defender, can't shoot threes.
Now, if this team is the same, but Dwayne Casey is the head coach, are the Raptors still in the finals?
So this team of Kawhi and everyone and Dwayne Casey.
They made the moves. It was front office moves, but they kept the coaching staff.
I want to say yes, they're in the same spot, but like, I don't want them to take credit away from Nick Nurse, because like, sure, Nick Nurse in his first year as a head coach has just been phenomenal. I mean, again, the only other coach to go to the NBA Finals in his first year is Steve Kerr, which is ironic.
Didn't David Blatt go?
Oh yeah, you're right. What was that stat I saw? It was definitely, wow, damn, that stat was wrong. I remember seeing like it's a battle of, or maybe it's just another example of a first time coach and coach to do it or something. I don't know.
Right.
Either way, I want to say they still get to the promised land because Dwayne Casey still had a very good defensive system. And he never had the offensive weapon of a Kawhi Leonard or the 3-point shooting of like a Danny Green. And even Marcus Gasol to a degree has been, I think, a decent 3-point shooting center. I want to say they still get to the NBA Finals, but I don't think they get through Milwaukee as easy. I think the Milwaukee series probably becomes a best out of seven.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I'll ride that. And I guess the championship's one thing, but like you said earlier at the top of the pod, we're starting to get into free agent season, which is again NBA Christmas for us NBA Twitter fans. Does this let's assume the Raptors close it out on Monday, Kawhi deadpans MVP trophy and Toronto's going nuts, Drake's on the floor, he releases a diss track within hours of the game ending, does this make Kawhi lean towards staying and at least, you know, maybe doing a 1-1 or something like that with the Raptors and saying, all right, let's see if we can run it back? Or does he say, look, I've totally rehabilitated my image for whatever hit it might have taken for, you know, my last year in San Antonio. I delivered the goods, Toronto. Thanks for the memories. Time for me to go to SoCal. What impact will a win, a Raptors championship, have on his decision, do you think?
So we, you know, I already tweeted about this because you tweeted, this is why you're bad at relationships, which was great for a good laugh.
How diplomatic of you. I just got to say, I didn't know like what your current relationship status is. And I was like, oh man, I hope he's not like in the middle of some shit right now, because that was kind of, but I was like, Corey knows it's all jokes.
I am single, but I'm friendly with my ex and she liked your tweet. She thought it was,
I saw that too. That's what made it funny. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, she thought it was comical. She actually sent me your tweet in the DMs and was like, LOL. And I was like, thank you.
I wanted Homer Simpson out of that. Like, I was like, sorry, I was just all jokes.
No, it was all good. I know it was jokes and it was comical. Now back to the question of what does Kawhi do? Man. So there is a scenario where they win and he's like, you guys took the gamble on me. You made countless moves to try and put us in a winning position to win a title, and we won a title. So I think I give you guys 1+1. We can try and run this back. Maybe we can add another guy or two. and we can see what happens. I think that's a very likely scenario if they win. I think if they lose, he's gone no matter what, especially now. Like being up 3-1, if you lose, if I'm Kawhi, I'm like, there's no way I'm staying. We just blew that lead.
Sure.
But if they win, I think there's still the route that he comes back, like I said. But a part of me, which is what I said on Twitter, is if I'm Kawhi, I'm leaving, man. I there's just nothing to me that makes me want to stay. Yes, I love the fact that my owner and GM are aggressive. They want to win now, and they've made the move for Gasol, for me and Danny Green, for Serge Ibaka the year prior. They went out and got PJ Tucker a couple of years ago to try and make a run. Like, the Raptors do try. But then I look at the roster. Kyle Lowry, 32. Marcus Gasol, 34. Danny Green, 31. Clearly taking a step back. Serge Ibaka, 29. But is he 29? I know there's always...
I didn't know if you were going to go for it or not. And you did not let me down.
For it. I just think this Raptors team is old. I mean, like, yeah, Norman Powell's 25, but what is his ceiling? Fred VanVleet, 24, but a sixth man feels like his ceiling. Siakam is probably the 24-year-old that you're intrigued about playing with in the future, maybe after having most improved campaign. You probably see upside in him. But if I'm Kawhi, like, I just don't see Toronto being where I want to be long term.
Okay, that's interesting. So you're thinking, so gone. So basically, if I could boil this down, you're saying gone either way. It would be nice to ride off in the sunset with your Canadian brothers and sisters, or, you know, saying goodbye. But you think, hey, it was a fun run. I got you guys where you've never been, win or lose, and thanks for the memories. And you're saying you got to be out either way if you're Kawhi.
Well, because, I mean, he's got this mantra, right, of winning is everything. And I don't think you ever win another title in Toronto.
Interesting. Now, okay, so let's take it from a basketball perspective. And you laid out what I think is a larger issue, which may lead him ultimately to say, okay, I'll do a 1+1 to see if the front office can strike magic again. But I think your rationale is well founded in that, okay, how are we going to tweak this roster? Because there are times, see game 3, where, you know, Kawhi's looking around. He's like, okay, I need somebody to hit a shot. I need somebody to be engaged in this game offensively other than myself. So I think that's fair that the roster probably needs some. I agree that I don't think this iteration of the Raptors could run it back. I think. And I think the landscape of the East will change dramatically next year. I think even if they get out of the East, I think, I guess the landscape of the NBA in general will change, especially if KD gets removed off the board, if AD ends up in LA with LeBron, if Houston and their owner decides that, hey, we don't care what we spend, we want to be competitive for championships. So it could be a tougher NBA next year in general. But then I guess my question is, you know, the likely destination, although you hear New York pop up a little bit for Kawhi, I think the thing we've been hearing for the better part of 2 years now is Southern California. Is he in a better spot on, say, the Clippers than the Raptors in terms of competing for championships?
This is also where, and this is going to tie into what, going to tie into this point pretty well, I think, you know. So he won with San Antonio. If he wins this year with Toronto, he's won there. This has been the mantra of, like, he just cares about winning. Well, the Clippers have never won a title, right? Or at least an NBA title. Maybe they won an ABA. I don't know history that far back. I apologize to those here who know the ABA titles. I know the Pacers won an ABA title, and that's all that matters to me.
I was about to say, you know some ABA history.
Yeah, I do know some. That's a little bit of a lie, exaggeration. But so I think if you're Kawhi, you get your title here. You still only care about winning titles. I already laid out why I think he leaves, because of the age and everything else. So then, yeah, you look at the Clippers, you see, all right, Shai-Gilgeous Alexander, he's pretty young. I don't mind him. Landry Shamet, I mean, he's shown some nice glimpses this year. Montrezl Harrell, he's a bull. He's a beast. Zubac, yep. I mean, the Clippers got him for nothing, and I think he's going to be a serviceable backup center. Whether he starts or not in the future, right, I don't know. He's a little bit slow, so I think there's some defensive issues there. And you got Doc Rivers, who is still a top head coach. Jerry West in the front row. Jerry West still there? Yeah, Jerry West is.
He's a consultant.
Right. So Jerry West in the front office. Like, I think if you're Kawhi, there's the lore of LA and the fact they never won a title. You can go home. You've won titles in two other cities. Now your chase can be winning a title for your hometown. I'm not sure how much that plays in. It's really hard to get to gauge what Kawhi's interests are, since the issues, the answers you get from the media are always, you know, Kawhi, how do you feel? Thanks, with my hands. Like, you just get these very mundane answers.
Right.
But I think the route for him going to the Clippers makes a lot of sense.
Interesting. Now, okay, let's extrapolate that a little more. Does that can Kawhi get someone to come to LA with him? Will he even try? It was probably a better question.
I think Kawhi has cemented himself as a player anyone will want to play with. And I say that because there is no drama surrounding Kawhi Leonard. There was the drama with the injury in San Antonio, but from everything I've heard from player wise, like, Kawhi just goes in and does his job. Like, he doesn't talk, doesn't complain. And I think that's really intriguing for free agents, to play with a guy who's already a top three player, arguably the best player in the league, who just goes out there and plays hard. You don't have to worry about the quote-unquote toxic environment a guy like LeBron brings with him, or Durant, who seems to be extremely sensitive, or Kyrie, who can't really gauge on what he wants to do from one day to the next. Kawhi is just like the most sure guy to play with at this point in time, I feel.
Interesting. Well,
what do you think? You don't feel that way?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. I just, I mean...
Where do you think Kawhi ends up?
Do you think he's going? Yeah, I agree. So I like Toronto. So I see the argument for Toronto in this, not getting into, you know, Canadian taxes or anything like that, which neither of us are qualified to dissect at a high level.
Surely not.
That is clear. I'm bad enough with American taxes. I like Toronto because it's an international city, and having visited Toronto as well, it's a really dope city, actually. I mean, I don't want to be there in December, but I like Toronto as a city. But it's also, I mean, great support. And I know the other day, I mean, I get what Kawhi was trying to say in his post game, but he's like, I don't do it for the fans. And I get it. I know what he was trying to say, but it sounded weird. A great fan base, front office, like you mentioned a second ago, willing to take chances and do what needs to be done in order to put the team in a position to win. I like the infrastructure there. And so I like it as a city that fits his vibe. And I know he didn't know a lot about it when he first got there. He's admitted as much and has said, you know, he's come to really appreciate the city in his time being there. I think it fits for him as a, you know, one, if he comes and wins this title, you know, two, just as an environment where he can kind of just be there and not sort of be under the glare of being in a New York or LA. I mean, Toronto's a great city, but it still is Canada. As great as the Raptors are, you know, if the Maple Leafs make a run, that'll be front page news everywhere, right? So I think that fits him as a personality, more so than LA. But I think the things you raised a minute ago were the biggest hurdles, right? What does this team look like? Because this team is sort of built for, I think, right now, right? And that's the whole premise. That's why he's in Toronto, right? This team was underachieving. The Raptors were underachieving for years. Granted, they were going up against arguably the best player ever, but they just couldn't quite figure it out. The front office said, screw it, we're going all in. We're going to make this trade with no guarantees. We're going to prove that the team that we built, the infrastructure we have in place, was good enough to win. We just kept running into a buzzsaw, right, at number 23 in Cleveland and Miami at the time. But so all of that seems cool, but, you know, I agree with your assessment. I mean, the team's just old, and what does it look like? Because they're I can't imagine a worse fate than getting this title, having champagne poured on you, you know, kind of making a decision in the heat of the moment if you're Kawhi Leonard, and then you flash forward to next year when the Bucks have retooled a bit, or, you know, Philly's retooled a bit, or AD's now in Boston, or, you know, the Knicks or the Nets are, you know, got two max slot players, and you're going out in the second round. as the Raptors and just being miserable, right? So I think you're right that it's good. Don't get swept. And I think this is what your assessment is, basically, like, don't get swept up in the good feelings, right? It's been great, especially if you won the title. You did everything that you were going to do and you said you're going to do. Go be where you've said you wanted to be, which is Southern California. And everything you said about the Clippers is right, too. The Clippers were fun. It's an exciting time to be associated with the Clippers. I think their trajectory is definitely on the way up. So that definitely makes sense to me. And lastly, I think just what, I mean, the Raptors said as much, right? We were going to blow it up anyway, right? So that lets you indicate, like, this team is not, I mean, they found a diamond in the rough with Siakam. But the plan was, yeah, if Kawhi doesn't stay or this doesn't work, we're just going to tear it down anyway. So if that's the mentality going into the offseason, then like you, I'm reluctant to spend my prime years with a team on transition. And so maybe the solution is the 1-1 to see how they retool the roster. But I think I'm on your side of the, your way of thinking in that, look, man, it's been fun, but I got my new house in Southern California. This is where I want to be. I'm a SoCal kid. I want to get back there and compete for titles in my backyard. So long-winded way of saying I agree with you. I just kind of think it's a fascinating thought exercise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely. And also, like, this just kind of spun something too. I actually didn't think about this. I was just looking at the roster. OG Anunoby. Mm-hmm. Kind of forgot that he's on this Raptors team. Has the appendix taken out. I think he's actually a young guy who I think you have some intriguement about playing with if you're Kawhi, because he can play defense, and offense was kind of bad this year, but I think he's intriguing. And also, I just wanted to bring up this point I had thinking about during your monologue is I actually think there's a scenario in which Durant returning to Golden State is almost more likely than Kawhi returning to the Raptors. And what I say by that is I think if the Warriors lose this chip, there is that kind of run it back mentality from the Warriors of like, y'all got lucky that we got hurt. We are the best team in basketball. And the same point of Durant can kind of also, we always talk about his narrative. I think that's just like the biggest thing I always think about with Durant is the fact that he's also just made it known that his legacy matters to him. I think there's something to his legacy. If they win the two with him, he gets hurt, they lose this one, then he comes back next year and wins one and then leaves. I think that just, it changes his narrative slightly. I just wanted to have that final point thrown in.
But Durant will never be Steph in Golden State.
Right.
Whatever he's looking for, that's never going to happen in Golden State. Like, ever. Like, he's A-Rod in New York, right? It's never going to be...
You thought you were Kobe. You thought
right.
you
were Kobe. Right. It's never... Now, that's the one where I say, hey, we did what we came to do. Because Durant went to Golden State thinking, I'll get the chips. I'll finally get the recognition that I deserve. And, you know, this is how this will work for me. But he caught it from two sides. One, he went to a team that won 73 games and he almost should have beaten. And then two, he went to a team that has a star. Like, Steph is Golden State, right? And that's why you had people saying, mostly Golden State Warrior fans, oh, we don't need Kevin Durant. We got Steph. We've been winning titles, right? Everybody was Draymond on the Warrior side, right? It wasn't just Draymond, this rogue player beefing with KD. That was a whole billionaire Silicon Valley gentrification Golden State Warrior fan about Kevin Durant. And to me, I mean, I will allow this level of petty from Kevin Durant to say, you know what? It's been good. You guys see what this life was like without me. So, you know, happy hunting. I'll see you guys in the finals next year is how I would look at it. So,
yeah, I think that's fair. So now, as we wrap up this episode of Full Access Hoops, what happens in game 5? Is this over in game 5? Next time we talk, are we in off-season mode or... are we talking about a game 7 or a right? What game 5 is Monday? Game 6 would be Thursday. Mm-hmm. Yeah, game seven would be Saturday. It would be Sunday.
We'd be prepping for game seven. You're right.
Yeah, right.
I think hashtag champagne poppy, man. I think Drake will be on the court tomorrow night. I think the Raptors will come out just energized, just knowing that they're this close. I think they're going to jump on. First of all, I think there's going to be a no Kevin Durant. I think he's just not there. You know, based on the reports before game four, I can't see a way where he's playing or even effective in game five if he is active. I think Clay and Steph hit some early shots, but I think the run is on. Warriors go down in five, which is the most shocking thing since I think the 2004 Lakers to the Pistons. But like Raptors win, hold the trophy. Like I said, Drake's on the floor. Kawhi's finals MVP. He gets questions about his future. He doesn't answer him. He deadpans. but next time we talk, I'm predicting that it will be on the run up to the NBA draft. I'm predicting a major trade would have gone through by the time we talk next week. Ooh. Probably AD, but. Yeah, I would think there will be some major offseason moves on the lead up to the draft. That is my prediction. The Raptors winning the championship, that'll be old hat. That's going to happen this week, probably tomorrow. Definitely tomorrow. Book it. Raptors in five. There it is.
So Durant plays, I'm going with my prediction. There's 14,000 eyes that have seen it, so I'm running with it. if Durant returns, it's Warriors in seven. I don't think Durant plays, though, which then opens up the door for Raptors in five, which I think would happen. I think Toronto, with all this momentum going back home, no Durant, I think that's how this thing ends up lining up. This is a Raptors championship. Champagne poppies out there. They're living their best life going into the offseason. And I like the prediction of a big trade by the draft. I think this draft is going to be interesting with it being so top heavy. We're probably going to see a lot more moves than usual.
I agree, my friend.
So that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Full Access Hoops. Jay, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JJAY, Chris, CHRIIRIS 206. That's for Seattle. Shout out to the Pacific Northwest. JChris 206 on Twitter.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at KWAL Hoops, KWAL Hoops. And then be sure, lost my voice for a second. Be sure to follow the brand at OTG Basketball on Twitter, on Instagram at off_the_glass_. Be sure to check out the all new merchandise we have. We got t-shirts. Go to dsgntree.com for all that merch. And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio. And until next time, Jay, it's been a pleasure. Peace out, knuckleheads.